10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And they're off. Welcome to the Triple Crown Countdown, live from Belmont Park on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're coming down to the finish. Rural on ice, stay thirsty and brilliant speed. It's a shocker in the Belmont. Ruler on Ice is the winner, and here comes Union Rags unleashing a final furious rally to win the Belmont Stakes by a nose over Peter.
Presented by Brisnet.com, Cal Density, and West Point Thoroughbreds.
And they're coming down to the finish, and it will be Palace Malice. An upset winner here in the Belmont Stakes.
The time ticking away in the Triple Crown. Commissioner down inside. Bonus beat green horses. California Road, Waverly Lake. Here's the wire. And it's a photo finish that goes to Tumblin.
Now, here's Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and Sean Clancy.
Good morning, everyone, from Elmont, New York, and Big Sandy. The Belmont Stakes is on the air. The Baron of the Backstretch, Mike Penna, interviewing American Pharoahs trainer Bob Baffert, even as we speak. So we've got Sean Clancy and Anthony Stabile here. And guys, fantastic to be here at Belmont Park. Cloudy day, muddy track. Little bit of sun peeking over the horizon. Sean, welcome to the Belmont.
I just drove in, just got here out here this morning, and anxious to see some horses. Saw Fermento actually train earlier. He's the only one I've seen so far. You know, for us, you do a lot of traveling and trying to get to these places, and then you finally get to see the horses. That's the best part. And I walk out here and see horses train, sloppy track or muddy, I guess, track this morning, and overcast, kind of quiet, chilly, but good to be here.
Anthony, you're the local guy. Fill us in on all the latest gossip.
Long drive, 8 miles from Howard Beach over to Belmont this morning. And, I'm exhausted. Boy, my arm's tired. No, it's been, you know, the buzz around here, I've said it countless times in the past couple of weeks right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, that the 3 weeks between the Preakness and the Belmont, when there's a Triple Crown on the line, there's nothing else like it in New York, especially around here at Belmont Park. And you see all the hustle and bustle. It's, you know, it's like Christmas in June almost. And this year's no different. You know, American Pharoah's going to be a prohibitive favorite, and you'll have 90,000 rocking this place in just about 3 days.
Yeah, it's amazing how the Triple Crown captures everybody's imagination. Ryan and I were driving up from New Jersey this morning, and the minute we got on Hempstead Turnpike, the first thing we heard was an ad for the Belmont Stakes, and it's all over the country, not just here in New York. I mean, people in California, people in New Jersey, you know, people up and down the coast of Florida are all into this, and you know, it's very, very exciting when horse racing is featured on ESPN during the week and NBC, and they're even talking about it, you know, on CBS this morning and all the shows that people watch, and it's really great for the game.
Yeah, it's a fun 3 weeks. For us that are in the game, a lot of times you're spending your life trying to convince people or that no one understands what you do. You're like, horse racing, what do you do this? What are you doing? And for the 3 weeks of the Triple Crown, it's fun. People are asking me. I mean, I've gotten to dinner parties in Middleburg and I go to the Miles' Little League games, and people say, hey, is he going to do it? Can he do it? And people want to know about it. And so that's fun. I mean, for us that are in the game, it's fun when people outside the game are actually interested in it. And it is funny. I had a guy, he said to me, he said, well, the Belmont, it's longer than the other one, right? It's twice as far? And I'm like, no, not twice as far. I try to explain, like, yeah, it's farther, but it's not twice as far. But, no, it's a great 3 weeks, and, you know, it's – you know, this year with this horse, I think the Preakness, I think the Derby, you know, he won it, but it didn't really, I don't think he really captivated the world when he won it. It was kind of a grinded out win. The Preakness, people really saw that and were like, wow, what, just between running in the rain and the weather and the way he won Front Runner, I think that really captivated people to where they're like, wow, that horse is something. I think that's where the average person that's not really following racing really got kind of gotten in really in tune with the horse.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, you know, you do it once, well, maybe you got lucky, but when you do it twice, then they can't say you're very lucky. And of course, you know, a lot of people said, oh well, he won because it was muddy and all of that. No, Bob Baffert did say this morning he was hoping that it would be a monsoon on Saturday. And I told him they may have to move that secretariat pole down the stretch if that was the case. Because they have the 31-length marker that Secretariat won by here in his Belmont. And 31 lengths, it doesn't, when you look at it from, like, upstairs, it doesn't really look like that far. It doesn't look like the black and white picture that we're all familiar right. with. But, you know, this horse, he does love the mud, and so that would be a feather in his cap if it does come up with a little bit of moisture in the track. What's the forecast, Anthony?
Forecast is looking at Friday and Saturday, chance of PM showers and thunderstorms. I'm hoping for one that we have a nice day because I love an even playing field and just a brilliant day of racing here, so I'd like the fans to be able to come out and enjoy it. But it's funny you bring up that poll. We were having a pretty long discussion about it over the weekend. And Tom Durkin actually came down in 2004 when Smarty Jones was going for his bid. And Tom actually walked it off and put a piece of tape at the line because he thought that Smarty was going to win by that line. In case, anyway, a lot of people did. Ron Turcotte, you know, went on the record saying he thought it was going to win by 25 lengths. And I think, tying into what you were saying before, Jude, I feel like a lot of people, and what Sean was saying as well, the Preakness really made people believers. Because you heard all the talk about how many times Victor Espinoza had to hit him to get up in the Derby. And then he comes into that Preakness race, and he's in front the entire way. And, you know, he ran away and hit from those horses from the quarter pole home. And the mainstream media and the casual and the average fan, they just, that captivated them a lot more than him winning the Derby. We'll see. I mean, you know, he's there, like I said, there'll be 90,000 people here. I know my Facebook page has been inundated with guys buying King Tut masks and women buying Cleopatra outfits. I'm serious, too. I wish I was fooling around. Maybe it's just the company I keep. But there's been plenty of Cleopatra outfits and King Tut masks. This place is going to be, it'll be bedlam if this horse wins on Saturday.
Yeah, and you mentioned 90,000. They've capped the attendance at 90,000, which is a first for the Belmont Stakes. And I personally am in favor of it, but a lot of people aren't. What do you think about that, Sean?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a bummer if you can't come to the races. I mean, I think for people that want to come out, it's hard to tell them, no, you're not allowed. It's capped. But you know, last year was a fiasco with the crowds and trying to get them out of here and the facilities. So I mean, I understand why they did it. I hope there aren't people that are, you know, just disappointed that they can't come. How many people were here last year? I mean, it's
they say the announced attendance was 102,000. Depending on who you talk to, some people will tell you there were 115 here, and some people will tell you there were 90 here, 1,000 that is. Right. I have no problem with the cap if they know what they can handle and they don't want, like, you know, fiasco is a perfect word. That's what it turned out to be here this year. I wasn't even here, and I was getting reports from dozens of friends just what kind of a nightmare it was down here. If they feel like they can't handle it, and you've heard a lot, especially this year, with a Triple Crown on the line for the second consecutive year, about digging some tunnels and just getting people into this big, beautiful infield here at Belmont Park. I wonder what kind of, you know, this is a park. This is, from my knowledge, protected land. So I wonder if they can't open that infield up. But could you imagine if they were able to open this infield up? I mean, this track from turn to turn is a half mile long. Could you imagine how many people they could fit in that infield?
Oh, yeah. Well, even if they could, though, I think part of the problem is the traffic afterwards. I mean, I've sat around in traffic for 4 hours trying to leave here, and it's very, very difficult. And Breeders' Cup days in the past, there's been situations with the restrooms. I remember one year a bunch of gals were going in the men's room because the ladies' room line was like way out the door. So, you know, it's really tough, you know, on everybody when it's like that. And I think this could enhance the fan experience. It's not, there's nothing worse than going to a sporting event and having a bad experience when you're putting your money up. So I'm kind of in favor of it. I took a little bit different view than a lot of people in racing have, in that there's sellouts in everything. I mean, there's sellouts in baseball and football. So, you know, the thing about it is, why not just, you know, say, okay, this is what we can handle, and this is what the bathrooms can handle, and we're just going to cap it at that.
And it's worth mentioning that they're not going to sell tickets here on Saturday. So you got to go to BelmontStakes.com, go to Ticketmaster, and buy your tickets before you get here Saturday, because they're going to turn you away. And I'm confident. I know a lot of people don't think that's going to happen. I'm confident they're going to turn you away here. I know there's still some grandstand admissions left, and if you want to get out here to see history, and you know, for $15, where can you go and have a chance at history and a rock concert afterwards? And for the $15, it's well worth the. Lower at the expense.
All right. Well, we're going to head to our first break. You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, celebrating 10 years of award-winning coverage.
Enjoy fractional racehorse ownership with a leader. In 2014, West Point Thoroughbreds led all North American-based public partnerships with over $4.4 million in purse earnings and 11 stakes wins. Own with a partnership that has delivered premium racing experiences for over 20 years, including a runner-up finish in last year's Kentucky Derby. West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtisintombisinboy.com. This advertisement is for informational purposes only and is not an offer to sell securities.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
Joined by Coach Bill Parcells, who led the New York Giants to the Super Bowl in both 1986 and 1990. And yes, he won both of those. What do you remember about the day that you won your first race?
I just remember being excited. It's the same feeling you get when they kick the ball off in football and they put that horse in the gate and your name's on it. It's a little like football, but you have absolutely no control in horse racing. And in football, at least, you have a little bit of control in game management and decisions that are made. But it's just the luck of the draw, but that doesn't reduce the excitement. The excitement's the same, the adrenaline's the same, and when that horse goes in there, you know, you're definitely paying attention.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're into the stretch in the slop at Pimlico. And American Pharoah has pulled away to a 2.5 length lead over Divining Rod. And then it's Dortmund. Tale of Verve, a huge long shot, is making a move on the far outside. But American Pharoah is all by himself. He is 5 lengths in front as they come to the wire. And American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Preakness over Tale of Verve. And then it was Divining Rod. Dortmund ended up third. Victor Espinosa and Bob Baffert get yet another chance at a Triple Crown in 3 weeks at Belmont Park.
another chance, a fourth chance for Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. Victor Espinoza, it will be a third opportunity at that elusive Triple Crown for him. And it all happens here Saturday, and we're going to have you covered right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Welcome back to the Triple Crown Countdown. We're getting you set for that run at history here on HRRN. Mike Penna back with the boys, and want to thank Jude Feld and Sean Clancy and the Big A, Anthony Stabile, for covering for a few minutes there to get us on the air as I was taking a little time to talk with Mr. Baffert, and looking forward to bringing that interview to our listeners probably tomorrow. We'll get that in the system and get that out there, but boy, it was sitting there talking to him. I asked him for 10 minutes. He gave me, what, 20 or 25 minutes. It was amazing.
Yeah, he never has anything to say. He's a very, very quiet, introverted guy.
I have been wearing him out over the last 2 weeks. I told Sean this earlier. I sent him multiple text messages, and we tried to hook up when he was down at Churchill. Didn't work out. Tried to hook up earlier last week. Didn't work out. So now here he is, and he takes about 25 minutes to talk with you. The guy is all class.
He's a big fan of HRRN, and that dates back to the Breeders' Cup at Monmouth when he was on a bad streak. He hadn't won any big races in a while, and people had forgotten about him, but he had a great Monmouth Breeders' Cup, and I asked him for an interview, and he said, of course. He said, you're the only guy that interviews me anymore. He said, the rest of these guys have forgotten all about me. And ever since then, he's been a huge supporter of our show and always gives his time graciously.
Just think about the position that he's in, coming here as a trainer, a fourth opportunity to pull off the Triple Crown. That's, Sean, that's unheard of.
Look, he's rocked our world, and what he's done brings horses to these big events. And you think about what the highs and lows that he's lived through in the Triple Crown. This will be his fourth. I mean, the three, War Emblem was kind of over at the break, and Silver Charm ran hard and gave it a try, and Real Quiet would be the most agonizingly awful loss of your life to watch that if you were Bob Baffert or anybody with that horse, and the last jump to get nailed like that.
He said it was deflating. What he told me, it was very deflating.
No, I mean, I rode 1,000 jump races, which is nothing compared to what these guys do, and the enormity of my jumping racing career would be an absolute speck on Bob Baffert's career. But I promise you, I get driving a car and something will trigger some race, and I'll think, oh man, I can't believe I moved too soon on that horse. And then I think about this, I'm like, man, that photo on Sly Bandit at Morven Park. Oh, my God, I can't put Cora Mandel. Why didn't I switch sticks left-handed? That was unbelievable. Pinky swear, I let nine pins go halfway down the pack at Far Hills. Before, in 10 minutes, I'm like in a rage. I'm like depressed over all these races that happened 20 years ago. I mean, so those losses, they don't leave you. I mean, they stick with you. And if you're not careful, you really will just ruin your day thinking about them. And you think about Bob Baffert to lose a Triple Crown like that, and it just, man, it's tough.
I bet Pinky swear that day.
Well, okay to place. I mean, it wasn't bad.
12 horses, 13 have come here. I'll have another, of course, didn't get into the gate, but 12 horses have come here in the last 37 years with a chance to race into immortality. The two that have come the closest have been trained by Bob Baffert. Real Quiet got beat a head, a nose, whatever you want to call it, and Silver Charm got beat 3/4 of a length. Everything else, I mean, Smarty Jones was close, was a length or so when Birdstone went by him, but to come that close back-to-back years, and now, again, War Emblem had the stumble. War Emblem, a War Emblem almost didn't happen because it was over at the start. It was as anticlimactic as it's going to get when it comes to a Triple Crown on the line in the Belmont Stakes. But to get that close 2 years in a row, and now 15, 16 years later, to have another chance to do it is just, it's remarkable.
Well, everybody talks about the horses that won the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, but the horse that's always the forgotten horse in the Triple Crown, and the one that I took the most personally, was Point Given. I mean, how Point Given didn't win the Kentucky Derby is beyond my comprehension, and I have my theories, which I will not go into now. But, I mean, it's like, are you kidding me? I mean, I saw this horse train every day, and I could not believe that he lost the Kentucky Derby, and then he comes and wheels off the next two. So when you look at it, I mean, he's won 2 out of 3 almost every time he has a horse.
Yeah, and he talked about the Point Given
year.
Did he?
And yeah, he went into that without even being prompted, and he always seems to. And he starts talking about his near misses in the Triple Crown. That's one that really eats at him because he feels like he was by far. When he showed up to the Belmont Stakes, he said, "I just knew. I just knew that nobody was going to run with this horse."
No, I mean that's the thing. That's the one to me, and hardly anybody ever talks about it. But if you know, I've known Bob since he got into the thoroughbred business, and you know, if you know how he is, and if you know how he trains horses, and if you saw this horse, I mean, Sean, I don't know, were you able to watch him train? I mean, this horse was a freaking beast. I mean, as beast-like as there ever was. And how he lost the Derby, I just don't know. It's a puzzlement. But, I mean, you know, you said earlier that guys bring horses to these races, or maybe it was you, Sean, said guys bring horses. Baffert doesn't bring horses. He brings winners. You know what I mean? It's different to have a bunch of horses that you run in these races. I mean, we know guys that do that. But, you know, to actually have them perform at a peak level, that's what this guy does.
Yeah,
he
knows the highs. He knows the lows of this sport. He's experienced both of those multiple times throughout his career. And the thing that struck me during this interview, and again, we're going to have this entire interview for you tomorrow here on the Triple Crown Countdown show, but the one thing that struck me was when I asked him about what's different about Bob Baffert, and to see his demeanor this year as opposed to when he was here for, say, Silver Charm or Real Quiet. He was young, he was cocky, and he kind of admits that in the interview. And he said, you know, I was brash, I was young, and I thought, you know, the more I was interviewed, the more I was on TV, the more I was on the radio, that people wanted to hear from me, and I had something important to say, you know. And he said, you start to believe that after a while. And I thought that was an interesting take on his part. And he's completely different this time around, where he's much more relaxed. He's enjoying it. He's having fun. Obviously, he had the health scare in Dubai a couple of years ago with a heart attack. I think that puts things in perspective. And now, you know what? He's just enjoying this ride with American Pharoah.
Yeah, I remember when he was inducted in the Hall of Fame, he said he was talking about his, you know, his demeanor about kind of being a jokester and kind of a funny guy. And he was talking to his mother, and his mother said, you know, it's like, said, you know, Bob, do you have to be? But I'm funny. And she said, but Bob, sometimes it's not funny.
Yeah, well, he, you know, I tweeted out the other day that he's become even a better trainer since he's been in the Hall of Fame, and I firmly believe that. I mean, I've seen him do some things that he didn't do previously in his career, like train turf horses very well, and he just seems to have a knack now of knowing exactly what to work a horse distance-wise, time-wise. You know, a lot of times you'd see him in the old days, everything was like 46, 58, you know, 110, but he doesn't necessarily do that anymore. You still see some of those flashy works, but if he thinks a horse needs a nice easy breeze, he gives him that. And that is something that you learn with experience. But it just seems like the minute they recognized him, something went off in his head that he had to be at even a higher level now. And he really has stepped into a whole different stratosphere, in my opinion.
He's learned. And there are a lot of guys in this game that are set in their ways and don't. And he's learned. I mean, the job he's done, the two to come to the top, come off the top of my head, the job he did with Game On Dude, keeping him together all those years. And she gets overlooked, but just as spectacular as Midnight Lucky was, she had a plethora of problems, and he did a fantastic job getting her back to the races a couple of times. And she might not have, you know, stayed for the year, but when he got her on the track, she was brilliant, and that's just a testament to the job he did, because like you said, Jude, I don't think 10 or 15 years ago he gets her back to the races, because he probably would have been too hard on her. And that doesn't happen every time now. He realizes what he has to do. If he has to coddle a horse and he has to treat a horse a little differently, you know, a lot of people used to accuse him of being almost like a factory, and every horse did the same thing, and year in and year out you could just say, okay, well, take this name out and just plug another name in. It's the same system. That's, he has changed that in the last, to me, the last 5 or 6 years especially.
Well, Bob Baffert, not the only one going for the Triple Crown for a multiple time. As I mentioned, jockey Victor Espinoza here looking for his third chance at a Triple Crown. Maybe the third time's the charm for him. And he took the time to talk with me about being here with War Emblem and then coming back last year with California Chrome. And here's what Victor had to say.
Both of your Derby winners, War Emblem and California Chrome,
we're both going for the Triple Crown. So you've been in that position twice. Is it difficult to get over that hurdle, or that maybe the disappointment of being so close and then not quite getting it done in that third leg? Is that hard?
It is. It is hard to get that. But for me, it's not, because I rode the first one and just stumbled out of the gate and completely. That was it. There was nothing I can do about that. Now, the second one for California Chrome, I thought that was the right horse to win the Triple Crown. But things started going wrong before the race, and then he was not, you know, doing that well. I had gone to the paddock, and he was just, you know, it was kind of too much for him. He was a little bit lower, you know, he was down by that point. And happens that I think for that, he was not really 100%. He don't have all the energy, and he broke a little slow out of the gate, and the other horse, I mean, he stumbled a little bit, and the other horse stepped in his foot, and that was it. That was completely lost my chances in there. I don't think about that, because it's those things, they're out of my hand, and I think that, I mean, there's nothing I can do. I did it best I can, and the horse, it was not with me in that time, you know what I mean? So it's not like, I probably feel bad if I kind of like blew the race or I rode a bad race. But I think all these two races, I rode it like the way I supposed to ride, and it was not my, and there's not that I make a mistake. And as for that, I don't, you know what, I was continue to be here and then, you know, move on. But I was thinking about, you know, a few days ago that as they're going to the Triple Crown, the two horses that I win in the Kentucky Derby, I did not even have one little dirt in my silks, not even in my pants, or my boots or anything. But where I'm blowing, when I went wire to wire, and with California Chrome, it's just not one little dirt in me. And even in the Preakness with both horses, when I got a lot of dirt, guess when I got beat? The Belmont, both of them.
Maybe there's something to that. Maybe you do want American Pharoah on the lead all the way through.
Right? Well, yeah, you know, it's kind of hard to say. I always think that, you know, if I plan something how I want to ride a horse, it never works out. So every time when I come to these big races or the Kentucky Derby or any other, you know, outstanding Triple Crown race, I never plan how I'm going to ride the horses. You know, I just, you know what, I just going to get out of there, you know, break out of the gate and just go from there.
How long does it take you once you come out of the gate to decide how you're going to ride that race? Is it almost instantaneous?
Yeah, it is. It's just right away. When the first jump out of the horse out of the gate, you know, I know how I'm going to get my position and how who's going, and, you know, everybody's trying to get a position, and I know everybody's going to different direction, and then I had to make a decision at that point. You know, so far, I make the right decision the last couple of times that I win, and but it can go wrong too, you know. A wrong decision could cost you the race too. But you know, I am now a perfect rider. Nobody's perfect. I mean, I made mistakes before in my career, but I believe if I don't make those mistakes, that I will never be able to ride better. You know, trying to be a better rider, and when it comes to the Triple Crowns.
That's jockey Victor Espinoza talking about being here with War Emblem, and then you heard him talk about California Chrome last year. He is in that position again here on Saturday, as he is the first jockey to have three opportunities to win the Triple Crown. We'll see if he can pull it off aboard American Pharoah. Of course, you're going to hear that coverage right here with us on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You can join us Saturday morning from 8 to 10 a.m. as we get you set with a special Belmont Day edition of the Equine Forum, and then all of that race coverage. And it is a spectacular undercard with multiple graded stakes, several grade ones. That coverage kicks off Saturday, 2 o'clock Eastern, and we go until 7:30 all the way through that Run It history in the Belmont Stakes. You can go to horseracingradio.net to see a complete Belmont week schedule. One horse that Victor Espinoza may have to worry about, especially late in the stretch, is Frosted, and he is trained by Kieran McLaughlin, who sends out his fifth Belmont starter on Saturday. And Kieran, a native of Lexington, Kentucky, nice enough to spend a little time with us here this morning. Kieran, appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy Belmont week, my friend. And here we go again. You get to wear the black hat this year if you win.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah. That doesn't break your heart, does it?
No, exactly. I don't mind. Once they go in the gate, we're all trying to win the race.
Yeah, I'm always curious when trainers do pull off an upset at a historic moment like this, what that feeling might be like. I know Nick Zito's done it a couple of times, and he's never apologized for winning the Belmont Stakes by any stretch of the imagination. But you're also a racing fan, so I know you'd like to see a Triple Crown, but just not at your expense.
I'd like to see it next year with a white bridle on it, you know, or in the future anytime. But no, once we go in the gate, it's all about your horse and trying to win the race. So if we lose, I hope it's still American Pharoah for a Triple Crown for our industry.
Does a Triple Crown save horse racing? We hear that all the time.
I don't know. It helps it a lot for sure. I mean, it's big news already going into it. It can only help if a Triple Crown. I'm hoping that we don't need saved. I'm here every day training and doing pretty well, so I hope our industry's not doing that poorly.
Kieran McLaughlin joining us here on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Not only is this your fifth Belmont starter, Kieran, but you won the race in 2006 with Jazzle. Look back on that day.
Well, it was a great day, and it's interesting that we were fourth. We dead-heated for fourth in the Derby, and we trained to the Belmont 5 weeks later. This year, Frosted was fourth. We've trained right to the race, so hopefully maybe there's some karma there that, you know, we won it in 2006 after a fourth in the Derby. So it was a great day to win an American Classic for the Mocktoum family, and my kids are New York bred, so, you know, they're both born and raised. No bonus, but it was nice to win. You know, with the kids, it means a lot to win at Belmont Park and the Belmont.
You made a couple of changes with this horse recently with the throat surgery and the blinkers, and it really has seemed to make a difference, both of those. Which one do you think was the most important?
Well, I think that there were like five different changes, and after the Fountain of Youth, when he got to the lead at the quarter pole, our horses, McLaughlin, Team McLaughlin, they don't stop after getting to the lead with a quarter mile to go. We don't run short horses. Our horses don't run like that. So it was very frustrating to us to watch that horse going to win by five and just stop. So we had to really put our heads together, my brother Neil and Artie and I, and we started with, did he pull himself up? So we worked him behind two good horses with Joel Rosario in the morning, and he went right by the two horses and opened up five lengths on him in a workout, won 11-3, a Bob Baffert workout that we don't usually do. But we took that out of the equation, and then we cut back the blinkers. We changed jockeys, and probably the two most important things were we did do a Llewellyn, which I'd rather say is a procedure instead of a throat surgery, not a tie back or anything, just to keep a horse from displacing. And then we changed tracks because Gulfstream Park was very dry and very difficult on horses. So we went to Aqueduct, the Wood Memorial, and between all those things, it worked out. We haven't changed anything since then, and we had a great Derby run. We were probably second best and finished fourth, but I don't think we were going to beat American Pharoah under any circumstances that day. But maybe three races in 5 weeks to him and us waiting for him here, we have an advantage.
And Kieran, I mean, he finished fourth in the Kentucky Derby. How long did it take you, and describe that decision when you think, okay, we're going straight to the Belmont?
Well, you know, we had talked before the race with Godolphin and the Jimmy Bells and John Ferguson, and unless we won the Derby, we weren't going to go to the Preakness either way. It's just too quick back 2 weeks. So right away we were thinking Belmont, but we had to wait a couple of weeks to announce it because we just wanted to make sure the horse was doing well. And Sheikh Mohammed and everybody at Godolphin was on that same page as us. So we've been pointing that way right away from right after the Derby.
That's one thing that you often do, and one of the things I'm always impressed by you when you talk is you know the exact dates of every race. And I go, how does he do that? You know, you always refer to, well, I hope I'm ready on May 3rd. I hope I'm ready on June 6th. Whatever it is, you've got those dates in your mind, and it's always amazing to me. So how far in advance do you plan?
Well, funny enough, the August 29th is very important because of the Traverse, and we hope that we get there, and maybe by way of the August 1st Jim Dandy. So, you know, we're always thinking ahead.
Off,
we like to try and point for something, and we're always pointing. And I'm real good with the dates because that's what we're pointing for, and the Traverse is very important.
Do you know the date of Thanksgiving this year?
That's my department. Going into the Derby, I don't think a lot of people expected that pace to be a little more developed, and it didn't happen. You had Dortmund firing line and American Pharoah run 1-2-3 around there, and they just inverted that order from the quarter pole home. Are you worried that there might not be anyone to keep Pharoah company on the front end, or that pace won't develop again for your horse?
Yes, it's always a worry. Materiality didn't break the Derby. Provided if he did break, he might have been up there to push the pace a little bit. But we're not going to be as far back, excuse me, and the pace might not be such a factor because we're not going to be so far back and have to maneuver through 17 horses. We should be from third to sixth and not that far back because it looks like Zito's horse and Dale Romans will be behind us. And American Pharoah and Materiality will be in front, and then there's room for four of us in between, and hopefully it works out and we're not that far back.
Karen, we often hear Belmont Park, the big mile and a half circumference of this track, and then you have the wide sweeping turns and Big Sandy with the nickname for the racetrack. How much different is this surface than what he raced over in Louisville?
Yeah, it's different surface, but I don't feel like it's a surface horses don't like. I think the most important thing probably is it becomes a jockey's race because, you know, it's just so different a mile and a half. No one has experience at a mile and a half. We don't run mile and a half races on the dirt. And so it is important for the jockeys to be familiar with the track, and not that anybody's not that's riding in it this year. Everybody's familiar with it. Victor's been here a couple of times trying to win the Triple Crown, so I'm sure he's aware of it too. But thanks. It's a different kind of race being a mile and a half, and when you move, and it's easy to ask a horse too early in the race for a run because it's a long way around.
You have a pretty good jockey aboard in Joel Rosario, and he certainly knows this particular surface.
Yes, the surface and the race and the Belmont he won it last year with the son of Tappet, so it works out well. Hopefully he can do it again.
Michael Hernan says thank you very much, by the way.
Send him a bill later.
Speaking of Joel Rosario, his agent Ron Anderson in the hospital, kind of a surprise to everybody, had quadruple bypass surgery, so I want to give a shout out to Ron. He's a good fella and a great agent.
Yes, he is, and maybe, hopefully he stays away for Saturday. Maybe the excitement might be too much after surgery, but luckily he had surgery and he's doing well.
You know, we're talking to a pretty good agent in his own right here.
That's right.
Former agent for the late, great Chris Antley. Remember when Kieran was an agent, they used to play liar's poker down in the agent's room, and I was a 10, 11, 12-year-old kid. Kieran would give me a $10 bill, and I'd run upstairs, and I'd get him singles, and he always let you earn. He always got two or three. And I think he knew he always making me earn. I would always find the ones with four aces and four fives and six sevens. Yeah. I'd always slip into the colonel. So even though my old man was playing against him, and the colonel was getting a better bill.
Yeah, that was important times back then. It was a lot of fun. Chris Antley was a great jockey to work for.
Well, Kieran, you're the best, and I can't thank you enough for swinging by here for a little bit. You're always so gracious with your time, and certainly all the best on Saturday, and go get it done with Frosted.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the job you all do. It's great for racing.
All right, we're going to step away for a quick break. We're going to come back with more. American Pharoah is set to hit the track in the next 5 or 6 minutes. We're going to bring you that information live as he gallops around this mile-and-a-half oval. This is the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for American Pharoah's run history in the Belmont Stakes.
Can American Pharoah do it? Decide for yourself at brisnet.com/Belmont, where the Handicapper's Edge will have all the top reports for New York's biggest week of racing, including ultimate past performances, daily selections, full card analysis with best bets, spotlight selections, and workout reports from Bruno DiGiulio. Brisnet.com analysis came up big for the Kentucky Derby, as Bill Finley not only tabbed the winner, but also gave out the 100-1 trifecta cold in the world's most prestigious race. And returning for the Belmont Stakes by popular demand from the Kentucky Derby are David Miller's pedigree analysis and the Thomas Herding Techniques Patterns of Motion analysis. Miller and Kerry Thomas's unique perspectives on the field are certain to give you an edge in this year's race. Visit brisnet.com/Belmont. That's brisnet.com/Belmont for the best reports, for the best racing, and discover why brisnet.com is the handicapper's edge. Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick 4. You hear him on HRRN Radio. Now get his personal selections directly from him at his new site, PopeJude.com. Every analysis sheet at PopeJude.com has his personal selections and insights. Each page is a handicapping lesson packed with years of racing knowledge, coupled with insider information gleaned from the pontiff's countless connections in thoroughbred racing. Whether you're looking for another set of eyes on the past performances or inspired racing analysis to assault the windows, PopeJude.com is the site for you.
Can American Pharoah become the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years?
Coming to the finish, American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby! And American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Preakness!
Find out here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Belmont Stakes, this Saturday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Go to horseracingradio.net for affiliate information or to listen live.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
With Affirmed and Alidar both winning their final Kentucky Derby preps in impressive fashion, the stage was set for a magnificent Triple Crown. For the horses, for the fans, and for the connections, the 1978 Belmont was a race for the ages. Many thought Alidar would excel at the mile-and-a-half distance of the Belmont, and that his powerful stretch run would deny the Triple Crown bid of the speedy Affirmed. Affirmed was able to get an easy lead, however, running the first quarter mile in 25 and the half in 50. Alidar's jockey Georgie Velasquez sensed the pedestrian pace and moved alongside Affirmed with just over 6 furlongs to go. Affirmed and Alidar raced neck and neck, pulling away from the rest of the Belmont field.
The two are heads apart and Alidar's got a lead. Alidar put ahead in front, right in the middle of the stretch. It's Alidar and Affirmed battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Alidar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Alidar heads apart. Affirmed's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
At the finish line, noses apart as usual, Affirmed once again defeated his rival Alidar and became racing's last Triple Crown winner.
Welcome back to Belmont Park. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Sean Clancy, Anthony Stabile, and our producer, Sean C. We are positioned trackside just outside of the Belmont Cafe, and everybody now making their way toward the rail because the track has just opened after the break, and American Pharoah is set to make an appearance, his first appearance here at Big Sandy, and looking forward to seeing him. His trainer, Bob Baffert, is on the apron accommodating everybody with some interviews. I haven't seen him turn one person down yet, and he's having a great time here at the Belmont, as he should, as he goes for the Triple Crown on Saturday afternoon. The longest drought in Triple Crown history, by the way, 37 years going back to Affirmed. You just heard that great piece that Jude put together, and boy, you think back, you say 37 years, and you think of all the close calls we've had, the Smarty Jones, the Real Quiets, the Silver Charms, and now to be here with American Pharoah, it's been quite a ride.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that long ago. But now I've come to the point in my life where there's a lot of people that I associate with that have never seen a Triple Crown winner. So it's going to be a big deal if it happens.
In the second half of the program, we're going to hear from Hall of Fame trainer John Veach. Now, John Veach trained Alidar Allendar was second to Affirmed in all three legs of that Triple Crown in 1978, and he walks through the entire Triple Crown in this piece that we're going to have for you. You want to stay tuned for that because it's absolutely amazing. Also going to hear from Hall of Fame trainer Jack Van Berg, who sent out Ali Sheba, who was going for the Triple Crown back in, what, 87, I guess it was, and unable to pull that one off. But Jack Van Berg will take us through that Triple Crown with Ali Sheba as well.
We got Mubtahij here in the tunnel.
Mubtahij just looked dead at us, like right in the eye. I mean, he almost said,
"Did he wink?
Did he wink? We're looking for the wink."
That was haunting. He just stopped and stared right at us. Wow, just coming.
He was
through
checking
the
out one of his biggest supporters, literally and figuratively, the Big A, who, by the way, was not so big the last time. Getting back to what you were saying, I was 15 months old the last time there was a Triple Crown winner. 15 months.
Really?
I was 60 pounds, but I was 15 months old.
Yeah, hey, by the way, I have a little bone to pick with you as the horses come out of the track now. American Pharoah going to be out there in just a second, but I do have a little bone to pick with you because you said you were going to bring cannolis this morning, and you can't tell the Baron you're going to bring cannolis and then show up empty-handed, Big A.
If the Baron would have listened to his voicemail last night, I'd have realized that the Italian bakery didn't open until 8 o'clock, and I had to be here for the 8 o'clock start of the countdown. So.
Yeah, unlike the Baron.
thank you, Jude. Thank you, Jude.
I got your back. He's down there talking to some guy with white hair, and we got to do the show without him. So.
Baffert or whatever.
Yeah. Well, American Pharoah is now on the track, and he came bouncing by us here just a few moments ago. And Sean, our first look at the Derby and Preakness winner.
Yeah, he just backed up the wrong way. Looks like he might be just jogging. I thought he had some bell boots on in front. Might just have an easy day. His first day at Belmont. Track's much drier. They harrowed it during the break, so it's much drier than it was. And I'd be anxious to see him come around the next time.
He is a beautiful mover, and Baffert has said that multiple times over the past several weeks that he's never had a horse move the way American Pharoah moves.
Yeah, he's a stunning horse when you watch him go. I mean, when you look at horses, you want all the motion going in one direction. You want it all going forward. And when you look at him, everything's going in kind of a unison, smooth, fluid way, all going forward, which is all you want in a horse. When you watch a horse walk, trot, gallop, you want everything going in a straight line, and he's the epitome of that.
Yeah, I was talking to Kyle LaPria, a gal that owns the Smith Restaurants in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and she used to gallop horses, and we were talking about some video that both of us coincidentally had seen of Jimmy Barnes on the pony literally galloping alongside a jogging American Pharoah, and how hard the pony was working to just stay up with American Pharoah jogging. You know, it was something that you don't see all the time. I mean, the pony was really having to work hard. Now, I realize Jimmy Barnes, you know, is a big fella, but, you know, it's just amazing how smooth and fluid and how much ground this horse covers with very little effort.
Bob Baffert, his good friend Bernie Schappa, standing together on the apron here. Bob on the walkie-talkie now, no doubt communicating to give some instructions as to what he wants done. I'm sure they've already gone over this game plan several times. They're not going to leave anything to chance here just a few days out from that run at History.
Yeah, and he's filling in Alicia Wintz Hughes down there from
the Herald Leader.
Herald Leader.
And Jenny Reese from the Courier Journal.
Yeah, he's filling them in on the schedule. What the writer says, they're taking copious notes about this jog.
I can remember standing by the rail at Pimlico the Thursday before the Preakness, and he came jogging by. American Pharoah came jogging by, and Baffert was right there, and he turned around and looked at everybody and said, "He's a Ferrari, isn't he?" And he's so in love with this horse. And when you watch him move, you really can't help but fall in love with him. He's a gorgeous mover.
And it's great here. It's a little chilly this morning, but it's great how it went from population 6 to population about 175 out here real quick when people realized what time it was and that the Derby and Preakness winner was going to be on the racetrack.
Yeah, a Triple Crown horse will do that to you. Ron Mitchell walking by from the Blood Horse. All the dignitaries are here.
They're coming out of the woodwork for this race.
So okay, Jude, what do you think that Baffert, and put yourself in his mind for a minute because you're a former trainer, but what's he looking for here today?
Just make sure that the horse is moving well and having a good time. All the hard work's been done. Just wants to keep him fresh. The bell boots are little pieces of rubber that go around the horses pastern, and it just keeps them from maybe grabbing a quarter, hopefully. You know, just all the precautions, just one step at a time, no big deal. Today's an easy day. The horse just shipped in, so got an off track. You know, Bob's going to be as conservative as he can be and still feel good about the horse's chances on Saturday.
Do you get nervous when your horse has to train over a wet track like this, Sean?
I do, yeah. I mean, if you had to do serious work, I mean, I wouldn't be nervous about him jogging and, you know, having an easy day today. But I think I'm not crazy about hard tracks or wet tracks. It just seems like that's where we causes some, it's just a little different. They hit the ground a little harder. It's certainly a worry. But look, if you're training horses or owning horses, you worry about everything. I mean, you worry about every little thing all day, every day. And, that's just the life you lead, is just complete worry about everything.
You have some guys that'll postpone a work if a track comes up wet. You have other guys like Chuck McGay, he won't. He'll send them out there. And more often than not, if you see a muddy track or a wet track here in New York, and you see a work tab anytime from April to November, and there's horses on the work tab, a lot of them are trained by Chuck McGahee, because Chuck will train them on a wet track. But a lot of guys don't like it. And for all the reasons Sean said, I would probably tend to agree. I would be more apt to just wait a day or two and let the track a bit. But I got to say, this track from 7:45 until now looks like a completely different racetrack.
If you are just tuning in, we are here at 8:50 Eastern Time, and American Pharoah is now on the racetrack. It's our first glimpse of the Derby and Preakness winner since he flew up from Churchill Downs yesterday. Looks like, is that
Mubtahish coming past us? Mubtahish going for a gallop, going past us, just kind of loping along.
I think American Pharoah's backing up. I think he's.
Yeah, I think he's still back. I think he's,
isn't that him back there with the pony?
Yes. So. Yeah, you can tell he just
might just jog once around.
American
Pharoah's back. He's still jogging the wrong way. He's just going the opposite direction of the gallopers, going almost to the end of the back stretch. It'll be interesting to see if he goes. I'm not sure they jog twice around. It'd be 3 miles. So I'm not sure if he just jogs once around and go a mile and a half, or. He's just following the pony, Jimmy Barnes on the pony, and American Pharoah just jogging along behind him, about three strides behind the pony, almost behind the in front of the gate on the backside now.
What was your initial impression of Mubtahish when he came through?
He's got too much knee action for me, but I think he's fine. I mean, I kind of wanted to like the horse in the Derby. When I watched him train, he didn't really wow me. Cool looking horse, got a great eye. Really looks at you, looks smart. I love that about him. He's just got a little, if I had to fault him, I'd say he's got a little too much knee. Just when he gallops, his knee.
That could explain the poor effort at Churchill Downs too, because those types of movers don't typically perform well over that Churchill surface, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, it's not terrible. I mean, you would, but if you're, if he galloped by, I mean, if it was any random horse that just went by, I wouldn't say, oh my God, look at that knee action. But as he has his saddle towel on him, and you're kind of looking at every little thing, I'd say just a little bit of knee, but looks fine. I mean, he's sound, galloped by fine.
And waiting for American Pharoah to come back around here, but it looks like he may be about finished up here today. Trying to kind of get a glimpse of where he may be. Boy, this is a massive
oval.
He's over
at the mile pole.
Yeah, he's just pulled up next to the lead pony now. Looks like Jimmy Barnes has taken a hold of him. Probably just going to go home from there, off the gap there, I would think, unless he, I don't think he wouldn't jog him 3 miles. I mean, twice around here is 3 miles, so he wouldn't do that. So it's probably all he's going
to
do.
That's about it for today. That's all he really needs to do,
it's
right?
It's pretty standard, like usually coming off of a work, a day off, and then a jogging day. I mean, that's kind of the way I used to do it, and a lot of trainers do it that way. So you see some guys now, it's gotten to be popular to send some horses to the track the day after they breeze to see how they are, and then other Other days, some people like to send them back after 2 days rest. So it just depends on the horse. Everybody has their own ideas, and you try to suit the horse that you're training.
Well, we are here at Belmont Park, and we are talking about the Belmont Stakes and an opportunity for the first Triple Crown winner since 1978. But want to remind you to make your plans now to join HRRN this summer as we bring you Saturdays at Saratoga. That begins with the opening Saturday of the historic Saratoga Meetup on July 25th, and we'll broadcast live from the spa every single Saturday with exclusive coverage of the sport's most prestigious races, including the Whitney, the Alabama, the Jim Dandy, and yeah, we'll have that Traverse Stakes for you as well. It all starts Saturday, July 25th, right here on HRRN. You can see a complete Saturdays at Saratoga schedule, and of course, listen online at horseracingradio.net. We'll get to a break. We're back with more. This is the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, celebrating 10 years of award-winning coverage.
It is time now for our weekly Keeping Your Horse Healthy segment presented by Cal Density. A C of A, commonly known as an analytical report of results from chemical and microbiological analysis of a lot number associated with a product purchased. This analysis is performed by an independent laboratory, ensuring an unbiased analysis of the quantity and quality of the supplement and made available upon request from the manufacturer. The microbiological profile should include salmonella, E. coli, total coliforms, yeast, and mold, not only to protect the horse, but the handlers as well. Not all manufacturers offer these findings. Does yours? It's all part of keeping your horse healthy. Are you mixing possibly incompatible separate products for hooves, attitude, coat, muscle mass, and gut health? Time and money are valuable resources, and you can save both with one scoop and done for under $2 a day with Cal Density. Ingredients in Cal Density are proven to increase bone density and hip height in yearling horses, according to university studies. Vets can prove it, horsemen can see it, and winners know it. Visit caldensity.com.
The $300,000 Evangeline Downs Turf Sprint, Saturday, May 30th. Evangeline Downs Racetrack is running 11 races with five big stakes worth $640,000. Play the $100,000 guaranteed pick four. Bet it at DRF Bets. Watch it live on DRF.com. Special first post, 4.05 p.m. Eastern. For more information, keep reading Daily Racing Form or visit DRF.com and EVDTurfSprint.com.
Join HRRN for Saturdays at Saratoga, beginning with the opening Saturday of the Saratoga meet on July 25th. We'll broadcast live from the spa with exclusive coverage of the world's most prestigious races, including the Whitney, the Alabama, the Jim Dandy, and the Travers. Saturdays at Saratoga, only here on HRRN. See a complete schedule or listen online at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Materiality and Upstart will come to the top of the stretch, seven lengths in front of Amy's Flatter. It's a knockout, not going with them. Then Jack Tripp on the inside. It is a match race at the top of the stretch in the Florida Derby. And as they turn for home, it's Materiality on the inside, grimly holding off Upstart. Materiality and Upstart, and they're seven lengths ahead of Amy's Flatter, down to the 16th pole. Materiality's got the lead. Materiality is putting away Upstart, and Materiality is undefeated. He has won the Florida Derby. Upstart was second, then it was Amy's Flatter, followed by It's a Knockout in fourth, and Decabrist was fifth.
Larry Colmus with the call of the Florida Derby, and Materiality winning that day. He was undefeated going into the Kentucky Derby last time out, but as we know, he finished sixth that afternoon. The son of 2005 Belmont winner of Fleet Alex, looking to make amends and turn the tables on American Pharoah coming up on Saturday, and he is one of a couple from trainer Todd Pletcher. He also sends out Made from Lucky, who won the Peter Pan Stakes here a few weeks ago at Belmont Park. That's the local prep. Of course, that's the same path that Anthony's horse, Tonalist, took to win this Belmont Stakes last year. But Made from Lucky, even though he's talented, that's a tall order here on Saturday.
Well, you know, it's the traditional Belmont Park prep for the Belmont Stakes. So it's a traditional way to go, and the horse ran dynamite that day, I thought, Anthony.
Yeah, you know, he ran a good race. He didn't really get going until the 5/16 pole or so, and on the turn, he looked like he was going to be hopelessly beaten, and he kicked it into gear, and I don't know what he beat, fellas, but, you know, the race has had some success. Of course, last year we had Tonalist back in 2010. They didn't call it the Peter Pan in 2010. They wanted to keep a grade for another race, but it may have been the Dwyer or the Jerome, whatever they called it that year. It was a mile and an eighth, and Drosselmeyer finished second that year, and he came back, of course, to win the Belmont as well. So Scotty Schulhofer's two horses, Colonial Affair and Lemon Drop Kid, both used it as a prep to win their respective Belmonts in 93 and 99. So there's been some success. Again, though, it was only a five-horse field. I'm not sure what it'd be. Conquest Curlinate, who finished second that day, was being pointed for this race, and Mark Cassidy decided not to pull the trigger, going to wait for the Queen's Plate up in Canada instead. So I don't know. Javier Castellano is going to ride, and John Velasquez is going to replace Javier on Materiality.
As we were in that commercial break, you heard the piece, Keeping Your Horse Healthy, and presented by our friends at Cal Density. You can go to caldensity.com and place your order right now. And here, this is pretty cool. For the Triple Crown Countdown shows, Cal Density offering you free shipping. All you have to do is go to caldensity.com, enter promo code HRRN when you place your order, and you're going to get free shipping just for being an HRN listener to these Triple Crown Countdown shows today, tomorrow, and Friday. So go there now. It's caldensity.com, promo code HRRN. And free shipping as well. Now, I mentioned earlier that John Beach took the time to join us on our trainer talk show back in February, and I took a little piece of that because John went through the entire Triple Crown when he saddled Alidar to finish second to Affirmed in all three legs. Of course, Affirmed, the last horse to pull off this elusive Triple Crown. Going to hear from John Beach in just a moment, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network. Alidar was fresh off a huge win in Keeneland's Bluegrass Stakes before he headed on to Louisville for the Kentucky Derby, and John Veach walked through that entire Triple Crown experience.
Were you feeling pretty good after the Bluegrass? He wins by 10-plus lengths, and you're thinking, boy, we got something here. And then you go into the Derby, and here comes Affirmed, and you think you got him, and he holds you off.
Yes, it was disappointing. I will tell you that. That happened in the running of the Derby, and I don't think it was significant in the outcome of the race, but I think that Alidar certainly would have been closer to Affirmed to finish, was that Alidar got hit in the eye at some time during the running of the race, and by the time we got him back to the barn, his eye had swollen shut, and I was concerned about it, but there was no damage done. It was just a clot of dirt or something that hit him in the face, and I explained that to Mrs. Markey that evening, and she said, she asked me, had I told anybody, particularly in the press? And I said, no, ma'am, I haven't talked to anybody about it except the veterinarian who has examined him and myself and now you. And she said, we at Calumet don't make excuses. So she said, just that's between us, and we'll just go on to the next race. And at no time during Alidar's career was there ever any question about us finding a softer spot or going someplace else. We were going to go to the Preakness, and we were going to go to the Derby, to the Belmont, and we were going to go to the Traverse. So just to show you what type of sport she was.
How about that Preakness Stakes? What was that time like in between the Derby and the Preakness for Alidar?
Well, it was good for Alidar because he didn't realize what was happening, but it was also tough on John Veach because he was trying to figure out a way that I could beat Affirmed.
Obviously, he was a tough rival, but what made Affirmed so hard to get past?
Well, I think that I had always, from the very beginning with Alidar, had been very conscious of his pedigree, particularly the Raisin Native side of him, who was a brilliant sprinter through a very brief career showed a great deal of speed, and many of his offsprings showed the same thing. And I was concerned that if I did too much with him from a standpoint of speed, that I would turn him into a sprinter, and he would have been a world-class sprinter. But that's not what we wanted. We wanted a Derby horse. We wanted a horse that could get a distance of ground and go a mile and a quarter. And so I worked on Alidar as kind of a one-run horse. having that last kick. And, of course, Ahern was multidimensional. He could do almost anything. And when you get involved in a street fight with a horse like Ahern, and he gets the first punch in, by that I mean getting a better position, it's awfully tough to bring the fight to him later on.
How frustrating was it for John Veitch in those three races not to be able to get past?
It was frustrating and very disappointing, and particularly the Belmont, where I thought we had him beat at the 16th pole, and he came back on us, and Jorge Velasquez, Aladar's rider, just rode a brilliant race, and he had Ahern down on the fence, and I had noticed in Steve Coffin's career that he used his right hand with his whip more than his left hand. And because Aladar was squeezing Ahern, or was so close to Ahern, that Stevie couldn't go to his right and had to use his left hand. And I think when he hit Ahern with his left hand, it startled him and gave him that last push at the wire.
Well, everybody always talks about the heart of Ahern because he never did let Aladar by. But I've always argued that Aladar's heart, and especially what you just stated about his pedigree and everything you had to do to get him to run this far, his heart was equally as big as Ahern's.
Well, they were two very great horses, and they did a great deal of good for our sport.
Hall of Famer John Veitch finished second to Ahern all three legs of the Triple Crown, and a great look back there with John. And you can go back and hear that entire Trainer Talk show on our website. It was back in February. Just go there and click on the shows tab at the top of the website at horseracingradio.net, and his entire hour was just amazing. But to hear him walk back through and talk about what he knew about Ahern, and how, you know, if you got in a dogfight with him and he was a street fighter and he gets the first punch in, it's going to be very hard to get past him. Well, he found that out three times in a row.
Yeah, Ahern was a very talented horse. He's one of my favorites, very game. It just seemed like he knew what he was supposed to do, and he would always gut it out. You know, he wasn't the kind of horse that would open up or be super brilliant to your eye, but he was a fantastic horse and very tough. Very, I don't want to say mean. He wasn't mean, but he didn't really care for people much. The lads used to keep him in a double stall. They would take a wall out of the middle of two stalls, and he had a huge stall, and his groom was the only one really that could deal with him. He was kind of a tough horse.
Sean, I loved when he talked about having Ahern pinned down toward the rail and Steve Coffin using predominantly his right hand when he would hit the horse, but he had to go left-handed on Ahern because of that, and when he did, as John said, he thinks it startled Ahern to give him that last little push to jump up and beat him.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were talking about before. Here's John Veitch, however many years later. That was, what, 78, and he's still thinking about how Steve Coffin reached and hit him left-handed. I know, I'm sure he has those drives like I have, going, man, if he just didn't hit him left-handed, they just never go away, those losses. You analyze them, you go through every nuance, every little thing the jockeys did and the horses did and you did as a trainer. You never forget them. You never forget those losses. In a competitive spirit, competitive atmosphere, sometimes the losses, they're the ones that keep you going and make you want to get out there and do it again. But, wow, they're tough to stomach. Man, we're watching a jumper go past Jerry. Wow.
Yeah. Sean stopped and pointed to the track.
Silence. It's not American Pharoah. It's not American
Pharoah. No. He doesn't have the same efficiency of motion.
That's a jumper.
But he certainly has some body on it.
Yeah, I thought there was a Belmont horse coming by the way. He stopped and pointed.
I'm going to win the 3-year-old stakes at Far Hills in October with that horse.
Who was that?
Yeah. I can't tell you that.
Come on. No,
you
kidding me?
I can't tell you.
There's too many rich people.
I was going to express that to make a bet right now. It's going to get down.
Yeah, do the future wager on a 3-year-old stake at Far Hills. See what you can get. It's a big market for it, believe me. Yeah.
Half the pinky swear.
All right, we're going to step away for another break. We're live from Belmont on the apron outside the Belmont Cafe, edging closer to the 147th Belmont Stakes and American Pharoah's run at history. This is the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And yes, we are your home for American Pharoah's Run It history in the Belmont Stakes.
Horse racing is a major professional sport where you can own your own team without spending millions to play. West Point Thoroughbreds can get you started competing in horse racing partnerships for a fraction of the cost of building a stable of your own. You don't need to know a lot about horse racing. West Point manages your horses. You show up on game day and enjoy all of the fun. West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit West Point, T as in Tom, B as in boy.com. That's westpointtb.com. This advertisement is for informational purposes only and is not an offer to sell securities.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
I'll have another. He comes here to Churchill Downs. He gets the victory here impressively.
Today, the Phipps and Janney families and their trainer, Shug McGahee, with Joel Rosario, all headed to the winner's circle.
California Chrome, California Bred, he wins on this afternoon.
Only the fourth time a Cal Bred has won the Kentucky Derby.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
If you haven't already made the Horse Racing Radio Network your home for thoroughbred racing action, then now is the time to visit horseracingradio.net. Check out our broadcast schedule to see where and when we will be bringing you the best in thoroughbred racing from the rail to your radio. As always, you can listen to our free live streaming anywhere in the world at horseracingradio.net. Also, make sure to follow us on our Twitter page at twitter.com/HRRN or on our fan page on Facebook. We'll bring all the best racing information to you with broadcast information, pictures from the track, and news updates as soon as we hear it. Remember, that's twitter.com/HRRN for all the updates as soon as we hear them. Don't miss out on all the action. Get in the game with Horse Racing Radio Network today at horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're coming to the top of the stretch. Smarty Jones is a four-length lead. Birdstone is moving to be second on the outside. Rock Hard Ten is back to third. And Smarty Jones enters the stretch to the roar of 120,000. But Birdstone is going to make him earn it today. The whip is out on Smarty Jones. It's been 26 years. It's just one furlong away. Birdstone is an upside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes. Smarty Jones was valiant but vanquished, finishing second. Royal Assault came on to be third.
A record crowd at Belmont Park watched Smarty Jones be denied the Triple Crown by Birdstone in 2004. That is one of several attempts that we've had over the past several years since affirmed in 1978, but Smarty Jones not meant to be that afternoon. Of course, Birdstone was trained by Hall of Famer Nick Zito. He is back in this year's Belmont Stakes with Fermento. Now, I'm going to tell you guys something here, and don't laugh at me like you did with Tale of Verve, but this is significant because of the fact that Nick Zito has won the Belmont twice. He did it with Birdstone. He did it with Detara. Both of those years, there was a Triple Crown on the line. Triple Crown on the line this year. Here's Zito. Here's Fermento. That's all I'm going to say. Look out.
That's all you should say. You should definitely not say more. Yeah.
This portion of Baron Boasting is brought to you by Longshot.com.
Jeez, he sounds like Ellis Starr.
What, picking the long shot? Friends don't let friends bet chalk.
That's right.
Yes.
That's what I've heard.
I think
yes.
You've been patting yourself on the back.
Shameless self-promotion.
I am telling you, Fermento, as you told me at Penn Mile, the Penn National last week when we were at the Penn Mile, you said, okay, if you like Fermento, if you think he's going to hit the board, and because I told you, Fermento will be third, right? I said he was going to be third in the Derby. That didn't work out too good. But he will be third in the Belmont, okay. And you told me to go and make a wager, all Fermento. So that's right. My rallying cry for the week, yeah. all Fermento.
There you go. That could be, very nice.
Cost you $21, Baron, 50-cent triple. All Fermento.
Correct. Yeah, with an 8-horse field.
May want to get really brave and make a 50-cent super all Fermento all. You may be able to really blow it up.
Ooh, I like
I'm
that.
I'm an enabler. Well, I'm really bad. I'm an enabler. I can tell you that right now, if you haven't noticed already.
Andy gets Mike Smith aboard.
There you go.
That is not a bad thing.
Yes.
Right? Hall of Famer Mike Smith in the Irons.
This message brought to you by Naira.com.
Speaking of Hall of Famers and greats, not just Nick Zito, not just Mike Smith, but Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, he's here. And he's looking for that elusive Triple Crown. He's here for the fourth time. If you're just joining us, it's going to be a spectacular day on Saturday. And looking forward to having all that coverage for you right here on HRN. Our race coverage begins at 2 o'clock Eastern with the undercard. And then we segue into the 147th Belmont in partnership with our friends at NBC Sports and at Westwood One. That undercard here on Saturday is so ridiculously loaded with quality. It's going to be amazing to just sit here and watch those races.
Yeah, I don't know about sitting here. We'll be running back and forth to the windows a lot. But it is. It's going to be an outstanding card. I think there's 10 stakes that day. Is there 10?
Yeah, 10 stakes, six grade ones, including the Belmont. They're actually going to run a stake after the Belmont, the easy goer for three-year-olds. I guess that will be the unofficial start of the second half of the three-year-old season because they're going to run the Belmont and then they're going to run the easy goer. But, yeah, 10 stakes in all and 13 races on the card. And it's almost a shame to call it an undercard.
Yeah.
Because it's just packed.
It's going to be a Breeders' Cup-style day.
Big day last year, first time the Met Mile was held on Belmont Day, and they're going to do that again this year. And you have last year's Belmont winner, Tonalist, Private Zone, and Bayern coming in, Honor Code.
Wicked Strong.
Yeah. I mean, just an amazing. Joel Rosario's going to ride Wicked Strong for the first time. John Velasquez picking up the mount on Tonalist. And that, I was reading a crazy stat the other day, Jude. Christoph Clement and Johnny Velasquez are 6-for-9 with a DQ this year. So 7-for-9 and a ton of graded stakes. So him picking up Tonalist is needless to say, I'm excited. Two Belmont days in a row. I'm going to make some money with Tonalist, hopefully.
Well, Tonalist is an outstanding horse, and Christoph Clement's done a great, great job with him. He's trained him a little bit unconventionally at times, but just a magnificent training job on Tonalist.
And he's been nice enough to have to be hosting Moop Tahij in his barn as well. Christoph, actually, the guy who gave Mike the Cock, Moop Tahij's trainer, gave him a call, and, you know, looked for some advice as far as a rider goes, and Christoph's a big fan of Gerardo Ortiz Jr., and he picks up one of New York's leading riders. I believe he was the leading rider in New York last year, Gerardo Ortiz Jr.
All right, don't forget you can join us tonight for our Trainer Talk show presented by Fasic Tipton. Special guest is trainer Billy Turner, and if that name sounds familiar to you, it should, because he trained the great Seattle Slough to win the Triple Crown, and looking forward to sitting down with Billy for a full hour tonight, 6 to 7 Eastern. That's on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206, and as always, streaming on our website, horseracingradio.net. Do not miss it, and Big A, thanks for your help in setting that up. That's going to be an amazing hour tonight.
Yeah, Billy's a great guy. Once you get him rolling about Slough, and to me, you know, I wasn't around, but I'm a student of the game, if not anything else. And to me, Seattle Slough is the horse that really defines being a racehorse because of not only what he did on the track, of course, won the Triple Crown undefeated, but his influence on the game for generations as a sire of sires, as a broodmare sire, just, you know, it's unmatched. And you hear a lot of people comparing American Pharoah to Seattle Slough, especially out west, and, you know, certainly a feather in his cap, and he'll try and do what Slough did 38 years ago.
Well, another pretty good racehorse was Ali Sheba, and he came to Belmont Park in 1987 with an opportunity to pull off the Triple Crown for Hall of Fame trainer Jack Van Berg. And Jack joined me a couple of weeks ago on our Trainer Talk program, and he talked about going through that Triple Crown with Ali Sheba.
Take me back to that day in 1987 when you come to Churchill Downs. Walk me through that Kentucky Derby.
Well, I'm working a quarter mile that morning of the race, let him blow out, you know. And Wally DeLossi, the trainer, he always told me afterwards, he said, I told everybody when that horse went by, don't worry about him this afternoon. He won't get nothing, you know. But we did that. Good horseman, Tennessee Wright. He blew every horse in the morning, 8th of the mile. We always blew our horses out the morning of the race, you know. And that afternoon, there were people talking. They were interviewing me, and I told them, I said, I wouldn't trade places or horses with anybody right now. That's how much confidence I had in him. He was something special.
Yeah, he was special that day. And then do you remember going down to the winner's circle? I mean, you must remember every detail of that, don't you?
Well, if you want to know the truth, I went over and slept in my car 2 hours before we went over to the Derby.
Really?
Yeah, I don't get too nervous.
Never bothered you a bit?
No, I took a good nap before we went over. My car is right there by the barn, and I told the boys, holler at me when we're ready to go. I'm going to take a nap.
Yeah, you woke up in time to do the walkover, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was up, but I had a good 2 hour nap.
What was that walkover like? You remember that?
There's a lot of people there when you're there for the Derby. A lot going on, but that horse, Charlie Whittingham, probably gave him the best compliment because his horse got sick, so he spent the week with me before the Derby. We're going to the track, and he said, that horse has a beautiful nervous system. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you can take a handful of fire and throw it between his hind legs. It'll never stick. He never sweats or nothing. You know, so it was quite a compliment for him.
You move on 2 weeks later to the Preakness, and things go according to plan there as well. Tell me about that day.
Well, I just, you know, sometimes when you run a horse, and it was nip and tuck to have him ready for the Derby and everything after that, and trapped up a Glottis and everything we did. So all week, that week after the 2 weeks after the Kentucky Derby, he was just kind of nonchalant, not too lot excited or nothing like that. And even Jimmy Crowell told Craig Perrett that don't worry about Alashie because he looks knocked out to me. He looks tired. So he was just a little, and I was worried myself because when we left Louisville on the airplane, he went to sleep and I went to sleep, you know. We both slept all the way up to Baltimore. And so then when he got to the end of the grandstand, Preakness Day, when they started clapping for him and calling his name, and that's where he learned to do that little dance, his eyes got in the paddock were big as saucers. And Craig Perrett told me later about what Jimmy had told him. He said, and I told Jimmy, he said, take a look at that horse in the paddock now. He damn sure don't look like he's sleeping to me now. So he was just a sensational horse, and it probably, I would imagine, cost us the Belmont because he beat Bet Twice So Easy that day, you know. Just bet twice like he wanted to.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. Every time I've talked with Chris McCarron, and he said it on the show several times, that he always blames himself for that loss in the Belmont Stakes. It was really hard on him.
Well, it was hard on him. And what really, I think he won the Preakness So Easy that day. And everybody said, Crepital Clearance was set. You should have won the Derby, should have won the Preakness. And they kept changing jockeys. And I told him, in the paddock, the day of the Belmont, I said, Chris, this horse will be in front every step of the way today. And he looked at me like I fell off a banana wagon. And I said, Chris, trust me, I know him better than the back of my hand. And he broke two in front that day like a rocket. And he just sucked him back and sat there and waited and waited. And, of course, I found out, Craig Pratt told me later, that Jimmy Crowell told him wherever you're at in the race, when Ali Sheba comes up to you, you hit it, bet twice, and go on with him, ride like you're in a quarter horse race. And that's what he did. We galloped up to him after three quarters of a mile, and he took off, and Chris sat there, and then at the head of the lane, we got run up, gone west his rear, and got turned sideways in the track then, you know. But it was just one of them things, and a year later, when he set the track record in Woodward, Chris came back up and stood in the saddle and said, Jack, you're right, he can gallop faster than they run. I said, you're a year late and $5 million short.
Yeah, I've heard you say on several different occasions that if you were to do it right now, you want to win the Triple Crown because you truly believe that you had the horse with Ali Sheba.
I had the horse to win it, yeah. And I'm gonna get it if Baffert don't mess things up for me this year. I'm going to get it because I got some two-year-olds now again. So.
Yeah, well, we're going to be looking at another Triple Crown possibility here in just a couple of weeks. Just curious, from a trainer's perspective, Jack, what's it like with all that pandemonium and all the excitement of going for a Triple Crown? What's it like from the trainer's perspective in the 3 weeks from the Preakness to the Belmont?
Well, it was nothing. I mean, up to there, after we got beat at Belmont, I was still on TV and I wanted to cry, you know. It was after the race, it was heartbreaking, you know, that happened. But I'm on TV and wanting to cry. And didn't dare do it. I cried when I won the Derby when they asked me about my father. I ended up crying on nice TV when Jim McKay interviewed me. So, but it, that horse could do just. I had so much confidence in that horse. It wasn't even funny. You know, some horses will lie to you. Some horses have good days. Some horses have bad days. That horse, he didn't have no bad days. He had good days. We just, you know, everybody makes mistakes. Chris made a mistake that day. He made a mistake in the Haskell with him too. So, and then after that, he never made no more mistakes, you know? So it's just one of them things. You have good luck and you have bad luck. As my father always said, you take luck over brains any day.
Typical wow. Jack Vamper.
That was awesome.
Is he the greatest of what?
That was
what
awesome.
An interview.
Yeah, wow. That was really, really good.
Yeah, he was spectacular. Yeah. And that whole trainer talk show was great. He walked back through from the time he was a kid all the way through that Triple Crown experience. And you can go back and hear it at horseracingradio.net, the full hour.
My first Kentucky Derby was 2001, and I got there. I didn't have any, wasn't really working. I didn't have any press passes. I didn't have any passes. So I was just wandering around, and it was crowded. I couldn't find anybody. I was about half distraught, and I was about to leave. I said, and I'm just getting out of here. I don't like this, but I'm getting out of here. And I thought, my mother used to always tell me, Sean, you're hungry. Whatever's bothering you, you're hungry. So I thought, maybe I'm just hungry. Maybe I got to go get something to eat.
Sounds like a Snickers commercial.
Yeah. Over. I like your mom, dude.
So I walked over to the stand, and I just thought, hey, I'll get a chicken sandwich. So I stand in line, you know, 25 people deep. Finally, I've got a chicken sandwich, and there's nowhere to stand. I'm looking, and I kind of like finally get over to the wall, and I put my elbow kind of on the ledge, and there's another. Their hand on trash can. We're kind of standing there, and I get my chicken sandwich, and I look over, standing next to the exact same, you know, the trash can with his elbow on the ledge, using the trash can as a table, is Jack Vamberg. And I look at Jack, and I was like, you know, so taken aback. I mean, here's Ali Sheba's trainer, you know, and I kind of struck up a conversation. I said, well, this must be a lot different than when you ran Ali Sheba. He's same trash can, same chicken sandwich. And I was fine after that. I'm like, hey, if Jack Vamberg's, you know, in the same boat I'm in, you know, we're all right.
That
and,
was
he's a legend.
That was Fusaichi Pegasus Derby. Was that right? Is that
Monarchos, I think.
Monarchos.
Yeah,
2001
Monarchos. 2000 was Fusaichi Pegasus.
Yeah, he's a legend. I mean, he's one of a kind. I mean, God, it's heartbreaking. You listen to him to think, you know, the same thing. There's that loss. You know, here he is. That you know,
remembers,
all the years
remembers
later,
every
remembers
detail.
Every detail. And, boy, it's just like.
And he truly believes to this day that he had the horse that could have won the Triple Crown. And just it didn't happen.
Well, I'm sure that that's the case. I mean, you know, that's one of the reasons that, you know, trainers always have issues with jockeys. But they help you and they hurt you. I mean, McCarron. You know, rode two perfect races and then, you know, just came up with something. And it's so hard to know, and especially in this race, the mile and a half on the dirt, you know, it is a unique race in American racing. And, you know, guys don't know what they want to have that little extra. And I think sometimes jocks have a tendency to outsmart themselves. You want to save something because you know it's a long way and you know the track is sandy and you know all these things. And so you try to do the best you can, and sometimes it's not the right thing to do.
Yeah, so over the years, we've seen these, you know, we've seen like Real Quiet got beat by a really good horse in Victory Gallop, and Silver Charm got beat a really good horse in Touch Gold in that class of three-year-olds. And then we've seen some rides that were, you know, maybe questionable or inexplicably bad, depending on how you want to look at it. Then there was other years the horses, I think watching them, they were kind of falling apart. You could see they're mentally, the funny side mentally was just losing it every day. He was just at the end of his rope. So this year, what gets this horse beat him? We've seen his first two races. We've seen the competition. We haven't seen him train. We've seen him train one day so far, but next couple of days, why does he get beat? I mean, what gets this horse beat this year?
I think it's Belmont Park. I think he's going to get beaten. I think it's Belmont Park. You know, and people think I'm nuts, but that's besides the point. Getting around here, this mile and a half oval, I not only feel the rider needs to get comfortable going around here, but I think the horse needs to get comfortable going around here, too. That, you know, we've all had the luxury of being around horses most of our lives, and they're smart animals. They're not dumb animals. And I don't want to say they're going to get lost in a big place like this, but I think they can. I think rider can. I think horse can. I think there's, you know, you got a very close to a half mile of straightaway once you come out of that bend in the clubhouse turn. And I just, you know, no, I can't articulate it anybody besides the fact that they get lost. And I think they expect those turns to come up a little quicker. And just being out there and on that grind for a half mile. And, you know, we've seen so many horses come here. And you guys are right. I mean, we've had plenty of instances of rider error. And, you know, but you see that in the Derby, too. I mean, how many times have you guys heard? I know I've heard it a million times. If Jerry Bailey would have rode a Fleet Alex, he would have won the Triple Crown. Or what was Gary Stevens doing on Point Given? Those are just two examples. And I don't necessarily agree with both of those theories. But this racetrack is just, it's so unique that ultimately I think it's the undoing of many.
You heard Van Berg talk about being in the paddock before the Belmont. And he told Chris, you know, this horse is going to be on the lead. And Chris looked at him, you know, like he just fell off the turnip truck or whatever that analogy
banana,
was.
Banana
wagon. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But would that be the formula for success for American Pharoah? Because he seems to be a horse that gallops faster than these other horses run, right? So does Victor just say, okay, I'm on the best horse. Let's put him on the lead. Catch me if you can. I'm going to gallop you all the way around this mile and a half track. And if you're good enough to beat me in the stretch, so be it, but this is going to be my strategy. Is that the formula for success?
I think it absolutely is. Anthony and I were talking about it this morning before we went on the air, and I said to Anthony after I found out that he thinks he can get beat, I said, okay, in a match race, which entrant would lose to American Pharoah? If you matched American Pharoah against every horse in the race.
One-on-one.
American Pharoah would win every race. Every race. There's no horse in this race that he couldn't beat head-to-head, including Materiality, in my opinion. Now, I know some people think Materiality's all that, but especially going a mile and a half, Materiality doesn't have a lot of foundation to go a mile and a half.
How big of a factor is that? He's only making his, what, fifth lifetime start here today.
I think it's huge. I mean, Sean would be able to address this more because he's more familiar with horses going long distances. But I think only five races and going a mile and a half, I think it's a pretty tough task.
No, it's a lot for sure. I mean, you'd rather have a horse that's been through, you know, had a little bit more of mileage and a little more grind to him. I think when you look at American Pharoah, he's so dangerous because he has that speed, but he's not ranked. You know, he doesn't get up on the bridle and he's not pulling. I mean, in the Preakness, there's some horses that if you gunned a horse out of there, they're suddenly going to go too fast and get running off, or, you know, if a guy comes up behind you or whatever. This horse is so tractable. I mean, I think you can kind of put him anywhere. I know riding races, just the worst thing you could do is complicate it. So, you know, if you're on the best horse, you got to keep it really simple. I wouldn't fool around. I mean, I'd break him out of there and let him run into the first turn. If somebody wants to go, you know, you can let him go. But, I mean, I wouldn't be kind of, especially going a mile and a half, I wouldn't be, you know, asking him to, you know, make sure you're in front. But there's a big difference between this horse, like Smarty Jones, Funny Side. Those horses were just, they were so in the bridle, you couldn't hold them. They were kind of falling apart mentally. This horse, I don't think, has that, you know, he just doesn't have that knock on him right now.
I feel like his connections would prefer a target, and I think they're going to get their wish because Materiality, for, you know, Todd Pletcher's a combined 1-for-50 in the Derby and the Preakness. But when it comes to Belmont, he's won two of these. He's had horses run very, very well with second-place finishes. Stay Thirsty, Forwardly Placed, finished second to Upset Winner, Ruler on Ice. Dunkirk. I like Dunkirk in the Belmont Stakes. I certainly didn't think he was going to be three in front going down the backside. But again, Johnny Velasquez got aggressive. Todd Pletcher on the lead. Commissioner almost took him gate to wire last year. So, you know, Todd Pletcher's done very, very well in this race. And he's done very well by being aggressive. One of his Belmont winners came with a filly. So aggressive in nature when it comes to the Belmont Stakes. I think Materiality is going to leave out of there. And you might be right, Jude. He might not have enough seasoning. He might not have enough bottom to go the mile and a half. But he's by a Belmont winner and a Fleet Alex. And in that match race scenario, I think he might be the only horse that would be able to get in front of him and stave him off. Look, I know Upstart was the one running at him in the Florida Derby, and Upstart, to me, was going the wrong way. But, you know, this horse has got himself in a little bit of a fight, and he's able to win it. He had 2 mile and an eighth races going into the Derby. And the Derby's like a throw-out race. He's the real – Materiality's the wild card, because you don't know if he fits the top echelon of these horses, and – you don't know what the tactics are going to be leaving out of there. I think he's going to be in front, but American Pharoah might take the fight to him.
Well, and a lot of people feel as if the Belmont has to be won by a horse that comes from so far back. A closer is what we call him in the sport, because it's a mile and a half, and it's a marathon, and horses are going to get tired, and those horses that just keep coming at the end are going to be the ones to win it. Historically, that's not the case. If you go back and look at charts from the past several Belmonts, the winners were either on the lead or very close to the lead as they were making their way around here. And then the last three Triple Crown winners, Seattle Slew, Secretariat, and Affirmed, all three of those went wire to wire. So this is a track that is very conducive to horses getting out on the front end and taking them pole to pole, so to speak.
Well, you know, when I was assistant trainer to Julio Canani many, many years ago, Julio claimed a horse named Kinnelmeeky off of Bill Spar, and Kinnelmeeky had won the Santa Catalina Stakes when he was a three-year-old, and now Kinnelmeeky was probably five or six. Anyway, Julio went over to the CTBA library, and he copied the chart of the Santa Catalina, and so Bill Shoemaker comes out to the walking ring, and Julio pulls the chart out of his pocket, and he hands it to Bill, and he says, "Ride him like this." Right? So if the last three Triple Crown winners have gone wire to wire, that's what I would tell Victor Espinosa. Ride him like this. Just take American Pharoah out and go to the lead and forget about everybody.
Yeah, a lot of people thought that was the mistake he made last year, with not putting California Chrome on the lead when he had an opportunity going into the first turn.
Yeah, and he didn't break too good. The two Triple Crowns at Espinosa lost, both horses had gate issues. But I'll tell you the other thing. I cannot see Materiality coming and running down American Pharoah. So my thing is, if that's the horse you got to beat and you don't think he can run by you, then you just go ahead and go to the lead and let the chips fall.
Yeah, you're, I think Frost is the main danger late, isn't he?
Yeah, he's one of the ones that can run them down if they go too fast and they've done too much. Yeah, I mean, Victor's just got to be definitive, and I think that's, you know, California Chrome. I don't think California Chrome won it a mile and a half, and I don't think things were. I think he was kind of over the top as well. So, you know, I think a lot of those things. I mean, as I always say, I'm a much better driver in my wife's Audi than my Subaru. God, I'm amazingly a better driver when I'm driving her Audi. It's incredible. I just like. And I never get in trouble. And my Subaru, I'm just kind of always on the brakes. So, you know, a lot of those.
When they work.
Yeah, exactly. When, you know, so, you know, when you have the horse, you can, you know, it's a lot easier to be a better rider and make definitive good moves. If you're Victor, you want to be definitive. It's like what Johnny said before, the Preakness, and that's exactly what, you know, you just want to be. You want to be definitive. You want to break out and go, and you know, want to be close. I mean, if you're in front, great, and if you're waiting, great. But you know, you just don't want to get stuck or you know, get somebody else riding your race as opposed to you riding your own race.
You know, Sean, you've jokingly, of course, mentioned a few times how you've been thinking, how you still to this day, if you're sitting in traffic, you think about rides that maybe you could have done something a little differently. As a rider, that almost has to creep into Espinosa's head. I mean, the two times he's come here in the past with Triple Crown aspirations, I don't want to say you can blame him, but to the casual fan, he's assigned a bulk of that blame for a horse not getting out of the gate well, like War Emblem. And last year, you know, casual fans, plenty of people that I know that come to the racetrack three or four times a year, thought it was incredulous that he wasn't on the front end. How much does that play a role in the 3 minutes before he's going into the gate on Saturday?
I think it's less in the three minutes. It's more in the 3 weeks. You know, when you have time to think about it, I would worry less about the last 3 minutes than compared to the 3 weeks. I don't think it's a big factor, but I mean, I think as a jockey, I mean, I knew what I did wrong. I mean, I knew what I did wrong. I mean, over the years, I knew what I would. I mean, I always said I didn't believe in myself. I knew what the horse needed to do, and I didn't do it because I got thinking about something. You know, the trainer gave me instructions, and I got thinking about something, and I didn't do what I believed in. You know, that was kind of what I always said. You know, if I just would have done, and I think that's where a lot of riders. You know, you get in situations where you don't believe in yourself and what you have to do. The bigger the moment, yeah, those kind of things that you know everybody has their mistakes. You know, things that they do wrong. So, I think Victor, I don't think you're necessarily consciously thinking, oh man, I messed up last year, but I think he. If he's going to try to do anything, he's going to think back to the things that he's done wrong, like California Chrome last year, and think back and say, okay, I'm not doing that this year. American Fowler's ride, his ride in the Preakness was great because, you know, it was pouring rain, and he said, you know, basically, screw this, I'm going, and, you know, I'm on the best horse, I'm going. I love that because that's exactly what you do in a big moment. Just go on and get the money, get the job done, and I think he'll do that again. I mean, I think because of the confidence he has in the horse, I think because of how good the horse is doing, I think he will be definitive and put him up in the race. And I don't think there'll be a – I think there's less chance I'm this year walking away going, oh, I should have done this. I just – if he gets beat on the front end or if he gets beat with a definitive ride, he gets beat. But I don't think he's going to get beat by – an indecisive ride.
Yeah, internally. All right, we have to get to a break. Before we do, though, guys, sometimes there are moments, like American Pharoah, certainly one of those when he came out to the track today, moments that strike you and they just kind of pop up and you say, boy, now I know why I love this sport. And as Sean was talking here just a couple of minutes ago, there were a couple of Phipps stable horses that were making their way from the paddock area onto the main track, and the track is very quiet now. Most of the activity is done, and there was a gray, and the other one was a dark bay, and the black and cherry colors of the Phipps were on the vest and on the cap of the exercise riders, and just you think back of all that history, and of course the connections of Easy Goer, who won the Belmont and Spoiled Sunday Silence's Triple Crown bid back in 1989, and you see that, and you go, wow, this is what this sport's all about. This is why we're in it, because of these beautiful animals and because of those types of connections that we see here at Belmont Park. And looking forward to all the action of the Belmont Stakes coming up this Saturday. We'll get to a break. We're back with more. This is the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, celebrating 10 years of award-winning coverage.
Can American Pharoah do it? Decide for yourself at brisnet.com/Belmont, where the Handicapper's Edge will have all the top reports for New York's biggest week of racing, including ultimate past performances, daily selections, full card analysis with best bets, spotlight selections, and workout reports from Bruno DiGiulio. Brisnet.com analysis came up big for the Kentucky Derby, as Bill Finley not only tabbed the winner, but also gave out the 100-1 trifecta cold in the world's most prestigious race. And returning for the Belmont Stakes by popular demand from the Kentucky Derby are David Miller's pedigree analysis and the Thomas Herding Techniques Patterns of Motion analysis. Miller and Kerry Thomas's unique perspectives on the field are certain to give you an edge in this year's race. Visit brisnet.com/Belmont. That's brisnet.com/Belmont for the best reports for the best racing. And discover why brisnet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Join HRRN for Saturdays at Saratoga, beginning with the opening Saturday of the Saratoga meet on July 25th. We'll broadcast live from the spa with exclusive coverage of the world's most prestigious races, including the Whitney, the Alabama, the Jim Dandy, and the Travers. Saturdays at Saratoga, only here on HRRN. See a complete schedule or listen online at horseracingradio.net. Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
And it is a true privilege to be joined by legendary golfer and Hall of Famer Gary Player.
They say Frankel is the best horse. The British say that. They talk rubbish. Frankel is the best grass horse, maybe ever. But Secretary would have kicked his butt on dirt. So let's be reasonable. Say he was the best grass horse. Don't say he's the best, period. It's very, very deceiving and very incorrect.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
Like so many before him, trainer Bob Baffert saw his Triple Crown dreams crushed in the final strides of the 1997 Belmont when his talented gray colt, Silver Charm, was run down in the shadow of the wire by Touch Gold. 1 year later, the white-haired trainer returned to Belmont Park with yet another opportunity to saddle just the 12th Triple Crown winner in racing history and the first since affirmed in 1978. But as gut-wrenching a defeat as that prior race may have been, this one might have been even worse.
But here comes his rival, Victory Gallop, as they come to the final 16th. Kent DeSomo imploring Real Quiet to hold on. Victory Gallop, a final surge. It's going to be very close. Here's the wire. It's too close to call.
Real Quiet appeared to be home free and have destiny firmly in his grasp in mid-stretch. But at the wire, it would be Victory Gallop's nose that would snatch away the Triple Crown, denying Bob Baffert and the racing world that elusive feat for yet another year. And the 1998 Belmont provided all of us with a memorable moment in Belmont Stakes history.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Sean Clancy, and Anthony Stabile. We're back with you at Belmont Park, just outside the Belmont Cafe. The clouds have given way to some sunny skies, which is a welcome sight here in Elmont, New York, because it has been just a deluge of rain over the past couple of days, and nice to see the sun shining and that track now drying out. No racing today. Racing resumes tomorrow with the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival. Of course, big card on Friday and that huge Belmont Stakes Day card on Saturday. We're going to have you covered wire to wire on Saturday. And, of course, this show coming back tomorrow morning, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. You can join us tomorrow and Friday morning as we get you set with the Triple Crown Countdown shows. Elliot Walden, the trainer of Victory Gallop, who denied Real Quiet that Triple Crown, is going to join us tomorrow here on the program. Looking forward to visiting with Elliot. Tonight, a special visit for a full hour with Billy Turner, who trained Triple Crown winner Seattle Slew. He'll be with me on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton from 6 to 7 Eastern Time. That's on Sirius 220 XM 206 and, of course, on our website at horseracingradio.net. And then a replay of this show is going to be available today, tomorrow, and Friday on Sirius 220 XM 206. They will replay this program from noon to 2 Eastern Time. So if you missed any portion, our interviews with Kieran McLaughlin, any of the other information we brought your way, John Veach, Jack Van Berg, you can go back to our site and to Sirius 220 XM 206 from noon to 2, and a podcast always available for you at horseracingradio.net.
There you have it.
Got it.
If you can't listen to this show, there's something wrong with you, because there are so many ways
wow.
to tune in.
I mean, really. Like insulting our listening audience.
No, I'm making a statement.
If you can't or don't, something's wrong with you.
Ad nauseum.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
What, Big A?
You left me speechless. That's which is rare. When I don't have food in my mouth and I'm speechless, it's a rare thing.
Yeah, he took me to an Italian place the other night, by the way. And if anybody's going to take you out for food in New York, you want it to be the Big A, because he knows all the great places. That place was unbelievable, and boy, did we feast.
Can we give him a plug? Steve's Piccolo Bussola.
Yeah, sure.
Old
yeah.
Country Road in Westbury.
It was great.
Greatest linguine and like clam sauce in the world. Of course, I'm with the only Italian from Massachusetts that doesn't eat seafood, so I didn't have one when we knew I could.
We had great veal parmesan, though.
And the Francese trio was...
How about the gnocchi?
Me and Sean C. had the baked clams. Missed out on the baked clams. I'm not complaining. I had more baked clams, but I'm not going to complain about it.
Restaurants in New York, they put up signs, the Big A eats here.
And we topped it off with a cannoli. And then you ordered that ice cream dish.
The tartufo. Yeah. Well, this wasn't my first rodeo. I don't know if you've noticed or not.
Oh, boy.
Big that's Elliot. All I got. That's all it.
You think Elliot Walden's the only guy, by the way, who didn't saddle his Belmont winner? He was on crutches that year, if people recall. He had a basketball injury. I think he broke his ankle.
Wasn't it Bill Mott?
Bill Mott actually saddled him, yeah. So I got a few people with that trivia question. When Mott finally won it with Drosselmeyer in 2010, I was like, well, it wasn't the first one he saddled. And people thought I was being a wise guy.
It's a good way to win a bar bet. Huh? What happened to Frosted? Where did he go?
I don't know. I haven't seen him. He went by what, once.
Just he just did the jogging thing, too?
He got lost out there. Big A told you they can get lost on this mile-and-a-half track.
They get lost out here.
One time around seems to be the trainer's preference, the Belmont trainer's preference. One lap jogging.
Well, all the heavy lifting is done. All the major prep action is done. So all you have to do is just keep him happy now, right?
That's it. Smiling, sound, that's what we want.
Would it surprise anyone, though, if Moupage worked one more time just for the heck of it? He's worked five
because
times.
Because he can?
Well, just because why not? Because I'm Mike the Cock and you're not, and I'm just going to work him one more time. Who knows?
What do you make of that horse, Moupage?
Well, I think you have to look at him. I think the Cock is a magnificent trainer, and I think he knows his horses, and he has a really good record when he brings horses to the United States. His horses run well. And he's had plenty of time to acclimate now. He's a talented horse. We saw him win in Dubai, and it was a nice race. So I think he is a horse that you certainly would have to include in your trifecta.
There is about a 50% chance of rain at this point for Saturday afternoon. And if this track does indeed come up sloppy, then maybe American Pharoah moves up even more, because we know what he's done on wet tracks in Arkansas and then in the Preakness when he dominated that race as well. And that doesn't bode well. It would be the first off-track race since 2011 when Ruler on Ice won the Belmont. But, boy, American Pharoah, if he's going to move up, and that spells doom for the rest of his competitors, doesn't it?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. Big races on off tracks, not my thing, not my favorite thing.
You'd have to think, though, guys, that it would have to rain an awful lot. They're drawing the entire card today, the six grade ones down in Rockefeller Center, the other seven races here at beautiful Belmont Park. You'd have to think that we know the Manhattan is going to be the race right before the Belmont Stakes, so they're going to have a good hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes to work on this track, even when we get rain. So I think it would take a pretty big storm and a pretty big rain cell to move through to alter the track to a point where it's going to play a role. And remember, the two wet tracks he ran on were pretty washed out. You don't know what's going to happen if he catches a good or a muddy track that's a little more cuppy. Like, you know, a wet track's not a wet track. It sloppy, washed-out tracks like that track was at Pimlico. It's a much different beast than the way it gets here. This track can get really, really muddy and really cuppy and really tiring. And for a horse who, to me, two slow times in the Derby and Preakness, you know, be careful what you wish if you're the connections of American Pharoah. If it rains, it better come down and rain, because you don't want this track to get cuppy and tiring.
Interesting point. Big Sandy, maybe live up to its name on Saturday here at Belmont Park. And if you're wondering about favorites, because American Pharoah is going to be the heavy favorite in here, favorites have done pretty well in the Belmont. They've won 61 of 146 runnings. That's good for 42%, which is well above the average winning rate for favorites, which is about 33% in our sport. Only three favorites, though, have won in the past 20 years. So hasn't been kind to the wagering favorite over the past two decades, and the last to do it, a Fleet Alex in 2005.
Yeah, well, those kind of stats, I don't know. It just means the public was wrong. So, you know,
to me, guys,
you're not buying it.
I don't buy that stuff. I mean, you know, it's neither here nor there. Anybody that plays daily fantasy sports, and evidently this race is sponsored by DraftKings this year, you know, anybody that plays daily fantasy sports knows you look at a guy, Robinson Cano, okay, Robinson Cano is 0-for-6 against this pitcher, and then he goes out and hits two home runs, and your team goes down in flames. So I you cannot pay attention to all that stuff.
One last break, live from Belmont Park. This is the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for American Pharoah's run at history in the Belmont Stakes.
It is time now for our weekly Keeping Your Horse Healthy segment, presented by Cal Density.
Proteins are made up of linked amino acids, 22 of which are needed by the horse as structural components for muscle and ligaments and are a source of energy. Essential amino acids like lysine, threonine, and methionine are very important and must be provided in the diet as a critical part of keeping your horse healthy. Are you mixing possibly incompatible separate products for hooves, attitude, coat, muscle mass, and gut health? Time and money are valuable resources, and you can save both with one scoop and done for under $2 a day with Kale Density. Ingredients in Kale Density are proven to increase bone density and hip height in yearling horses, according to university studies. Vets can prove it, horsemen can see it, and winners know it. Visit KaleDensity.com.
Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
And we're going to kick things off with trainer Graham Motion. Hall of Fame trainer Phil Mott here on Trainer Talk. Roger Atfield is going to be with us for the next half an hour. Carl Nasker, an honor to have him on the show tonight. Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahey, nice enough to spend some time with us. I want to welcome Hall of Famer Bob Baffert to the program.
Trainer Talk, the biggest names in horse racing. Wednesdays, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 220 and XM 206. And always streaming live at horseracingradio.net. Can American Pharoah become the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years?
Coming to the finish, American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby! And American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Preakness!
Find out here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Belmont Stakes, this Saturday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Go to horseracingradio.net for affiliate information or to listen live.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
All right, getting ready to wrap up this first edition of the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We're not stopping here, though. We come back tomorrow with another edition from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. Friday, the same thing. And then, of course, on Saturday, a special Equine Forum show, Belmont Day edition. Our whole team will be together for that. Looking forward to bringing you that from 8 to 10. And then Saturday afternoon, beginning at 2 o'clock Eastern, we'll have all that coverage of the races for you. So you can see a complete Belmont Week schedule on our website, horseracingradio.net. And don't forget, a podcast of this show also going to be available for you at horseracingradio.net. And Elliot Walden going to be one of several guests on the program tomorrow. We're hoping to be joined by Hall of Famer Nick Zito. Hope to get him over here tomorrow and talk about being the spoiler in this race. He's done it a couple of times now and denying the Triple Crown with Birdstone and with DeTerra. And we'll see if we can't get a few other connections up here for us tomorrow as well. So it should be a really, really busy show. And your entry mate, the Duke, Ed DeRosa from Brisnet, going to stop by tomorrow for a little segment.
We'll be here tomorrow night for the Brisnet.com call-in show, the interesting Belmont Stakes edition. Make sure the nation's on their toes and ready to duke it out with me and Ed.
And then you're joined by the Uber Capper on Friday evening from 6 to 7 Eastern for the Express Bet Weekend Stakes preview and taking a look at all these races here at Belmont on Saturday.
Yeah, we had a pretty good week last week. I think we had 7 of 9 winners on top, so hopefully we got a nice solid prep into us for that action-packed Belmont Stakes Day card.
Hope you don't bounce.
I don't bounce. The big A doesn't bounce. The big
A
doesn't bounce, brother.
You'd know if he did.
You sure would. Don't you know bumbles bounce like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? I'm not a bumble.
I don't know.
Cold.
What else
do
you want to talk about?
Man.
Where do you want to go? Huh?
You're cold.
It is chilly here right now. We are positioned underneath the grandstand, and it is a little cool where we are, but the sun is shining now, so it's good. We're going to go out and get in the sunshine after this. I know that.
Yeah. Well, it's turned out to be a beautiful day. What looked like was going to be really kind of ugly has now turned into a sparkling day. It's unfortunate we're not racing here today, but we'll be racing tomorrow.
Mrs. Baron brought the sun.
Yes, she did.
Yeah. Yeah, my beautiful wife showing up. She just got here from Kentucky, so she's here for the festivities of Belmont Week. And I was thinking about this. This is actually the 20-year anniversary of our first date, because our first date was at the Belmont Stakes in 95. Yeah. How about that?
Boy, he's a big man.
You're real nostalgic today.
I am somewhat nostalgic.
What's going on? Did you get a bad test or something? Or
Do you need me to hold the candle or something?
Did you get a physical this week or something? I'm concerned. I just got thinking about that
as I was pulling in today, 20 years ago.
20 years.
Did you call it a date? By the way,
yeah, our first one. I had two extra tickets to the Belmont that year, and I was like, "Hey, baby, want to go to the Belmont?"
I'm sure that's how it went down. I can hear it now.
Does that still work?
How you doing? Yeah, well, she's here, isn't she? So I guess 20 years later, she's still falling for that same pickup line.
Oh, I thought you meant your first date with Jude.
No, our first date was Arlington Park, I think.
It's getting punchy here at HRN.
I guess so. All right.
Well, that's a cute story, man.
By the way, join us tomorrow morning, because we're going to have that entire interview with Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. I want to thank Jude and Sean and Big A for opening the show for us here this morning, because I was tied up with the silver-haired one, talking with him for about 20 or 25 minutes, and it was amazing. He walked through each of his opportunities to win the Triple Crown and then looked ahead to what it might be like this year. So we'll have that entire interview for you here on the program tomorrow, so make sure you tune in for that. 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern in Lexington, in Louisville, and streaming worldwide on our website. And then, of course, replayed on Sirius 220 XM 206 from noon to 2, and a podcast on our site at horseracingradio.net. Trainer talk tonight. Going to be fun. Going to be joined by Billy Turner, trainer of Seattle SLU, for the full hour, 6 to 7 Eastern, Sirius 220 XM 206. Big A, been fun.
Yeah, my first countdown. Loved it.
All right. Shano? Well done, my friend.
Just no drama. That's what we're looking for until Saturday. No drama.
Everything quiet.
No business is good business.
All right. For our producers, Lee Delapina back in our Lexington studio. For Sean C. here on site. And for the Big A, Anthony Stabile, Sean Clancy, and Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna.
Good night, Barbados.